Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and this is a special day in the life of Health Matters.
Dun, 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 dun.
This is Health Matters 500, our 500th show. We've titled this, What Went Wrong?
Is this a celebration of sorts? Well, but who's the celebration really for?
I think that it should merit an investigation. Let's face it, we slipped in, a door was left unlocked, there were some serious lapses in oversight, and all of a sudden, we are a long-running health radio show. Something went wrong here. And I think that there needs to be an accounting.
I think if we had to record the show out in one of the more visible rooms where they had to look at us, I think it might not be going.
For those of you who know the studios at Moorhead State Public Radio, we slip in the back door, we go to the very last studio, we do not make noise, and apparently no one knows we're on the air. Special thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and here to introduce the other aspect of Health Matters, our online presence, is the service owner for telephony, Rick Phillips. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can get the audio of the shows. It's not like I haven't said this 500 times. You can get the audio of the shows at msuradio.com. They're there. They're in MP3 format. If you don't know what that means, click on it anyway. The odds are your computer does know what it is. Click on it. Listen to it. Copy it to your computer. Record it to a CD. Put it in your car. Listen to us. Do Health Matters all the time. Just try to listen to all 500 shows. I mean, 500 hours, Tony. How long would that actually take? I know in an 8-hour workday, that would take like 4 months.
It is a radio black hole. I mean, once you fall over the event horizon, all of a sudden, you would never finish listening to the shows. It would just consume you. It's like looking at the sun. You shouldn't do that. It's just a bad idea.
You know what I think they should do? I think they should make us go back and listen to the first 100 shows. Well, the first 100 shows aren't there on msuradio.com. They usually keep only about 5 years worth of shows out in the main archive, but that 5 years should be enough to quench your thirst for Health Matters. And if you don't want to, or maybe you're done listening to the show, jump on over to Facebook, do a search for HM Radio Show, and if you don't want to search, just do facebook.com/HM Radio Show, and that'll get you to our page there where you can like us, you can monitor some of our posts, look at our timeline. There are things there that were once called Tony's Tips. There's some things there maybe to help you live a more healthy lifestyle. There's some interesting research articles that we bring on the show, and then there's just some plain discussion. There's a lot to do there at Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/HM Radio Show and give us a like.
Our sponsor, prescription drug overdoses, something else that's gone seriously wrong in the last
500 times.
More than that, actually. And this is painful for me, I will tell you, but we will try to get through these. These are our top 10 facts about prescription painkillers. This was a press release from the CDC, the New York Times, and other news outlets picked it up. I sort of scanned through all of them and put this together. Fact number one, prescription painkillers killed 48,000 women between 1999 and 2010.
Prescription painkillers killed 48,000 women. Is that what you just said?
Yep. Now you look at it.
Oh my gosh, Tony.
Yeah. The Vietnam War from, and you can argue about when it started, but from the military advisors in the early 60s through Peace with Honor in 1972, killed 58,000 soldiers.
Wow.
And we're looking at 48,000 deaths among women. And I think, I really think, we've reported on this show, life expectancy for women has been dropping since the mid-1990s, and I really believe this plays a major role. I went back and looked at the life expectancy for men in the 1960s, and it stayed steady while women's life expectancy rose. I think we're seeing a similar thing. This is impacting the population. Obviously, you lose 48,000 women over a period of 10 years, and you've got, this is just hard to talk about.
Yeah, very much so.
Fact number two, more than 6,600 women, or 18 women every day, died from a prescription painkiller overdose in 2010. That's up. That's 6,600 women in 2010 is up from 1,300 in 1999.
Tony, do they have any way to break that down between what would be deemed true, you know, doctor-prescribed usage versus enjoyment or recreational use?
Hold that thought. Let me do three.
Okay.
And we will get to that.
You got it.
Actually, fun fact number seven addresses that. But yes, there's not a good breakdown there, but there is some facts that address that. Fact number three, Thomas Frieden, he's the director of the CDC, said women are dying from prescription painkillers at rates we have never seen before. It is underrecognized by doctors and patients. If you're in Eastern Kentucky, it is not underrecognized. I've got to tell you, we see this absolutely every day, every week. communities have been absolutely ravaged by the deaths of people due to these prescription drugs.
Wow.
Fact number four, fatal overdoses increased more than five times among women and more than tripled among men between 1999 and 2010. Again, to set this in context, we felt that we could do a better job with some of the new prescription painkillers. And we being the medical establishment, the pharmaceutical industry, they started talking about during this time pain as a vital sign. Pain is a symptom, not a sign. This is the purist in me objects to that. But the other part of it was we now, most hospitals will actually assess on a daily basis or on every nursing shift, will ask you to please rate your pain on a pain scale. We pay a lot of attention to pain. We felt that we had medicines that would take care of that pain. And as a result of trying to improve our pain control, that is one of the things that hospitals and doctors are rated on, trying to improve our pain control, we have dumped large amounts of painkillers into society with a horrific toll. Fact number five, there were four times more deaths among women from prescription painkiller overdose than cocaine and heroin deaths in 2010. I think we've heard this before.
Right.
Really, these things, even though they are doctor-prescribed, pharmaceutical-made, even though there is a constant concentration, when you take them under certain circumstances, combine them with alcohol, sleeping pills, other medications, the results are very unpredictable. Even though they are measured out in milligrams and they are guaranteed to have equal potency, the problem is the situations change and they are deadly. We'll stop at five. We'll talk more about what you were talking about. Is this due to excessive illicit use? Are we prescribing them poorly and monitoring them poorly in people who are taking them for chronic pain? I'll just go ahead and tell you the answer is both. But,
well, boy, you did a good job of holding that answer.
Yeah. Well,
no teasers coming from Health Matters. You'd think 500 shows, we'd learn our lesson.
Yeah, I don't know. This is just painful to report, Rick. I don't have a great scheme for using this for the show because I am shocked. It is disturbing. You know, you look around, you see something bad happening, but then people put numbers on it, and it is much worse than you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's just tragic, 48,000.
That is our sponsor. Prescription drug overdose is something else that has gone seriously wrong in the past 10 years besides Health Matters. And let me remind you then, we came on, Rick and I, and
a couple of people,
pharmacists,
actually.
Yeah, at St. Clair Regional Medical Center, Dr. Greg Bausch. Dr. Kimberly Williams has worked on it with us. And we've had some regular guest hosts over the past 10 years, but a lot of it we've done ourselves. And now we're up to 500 shows. I want to remind our radio fans about really what was going on in 2003. Besides an ice storm, which completely knocked out Morehead State Public Radio transmitter for our first show, I'll remind you what else happened in 2003. In January 2003, as we were about to sign on the NASA's Pioneer 10 spacecraft at 7.5 billion miles from Earth, signed off.
Wow.
So it was Pioneer. It was us. Are we aliens? Are we from another planet? We're not saying.
We're letting other people answer that.
That's right. That is not up to us to decide. Unfortunately, in February, the space shuttle Columbia disintegrated during reentry over Texas, killed all seven astronauts. Mm. On the medical front, February 26th, the first case of SARS was reported. The doctor who reported that case, Dr. Carlo Urbani, actually died of the disease. It was highly contagious. Most of it was centered around Asia. There were reports in Canada, extremely contagious disease, and we started to realize that there could be a worldwide epidemic of a rapidly developing disease. In March, FBI agents raided the corporate headquarters of HealthSouth Corporation in Birmingham and arrested their founder, chairman, and CEO, Richard Scrushy, because he had directed company employees to falsely report exaggerated company earnings to meet stockholder expectations. They had nearly $4.5 billion in revenue. They did not file bankruptcy, and he was acquitted of all charges. But clearly, it was a mess. And a reminder, Rick, one of the first really big-profile cases that made us realize how people were amassing huge fortunes.
Absolutely.
Massive wealth.
At the cost of so many others with, you know, just negligence.
Yeah. And I remember Robert Young, the ER doctor, went to an insurance company corporate headquarters and said, well, it's a nice building, but it is built on the bones of old people. Still a famous quote, he said, directly to the company. On March 19th, the Iraqi war began. We invaded Iraq, we and allied forces.
Wow.
High point in U.S. history. Health Matters starts in our format, and then also the Iraqi war began. On April 14th, the Human Genome Project was completed. 99% of the human genome sequenced, and we are still...
yet trying to sequence Health Matters.
Yeah. But I will tell you, the benefits of that are starting to become obvious. It is very, very useful knowing the human
genome. So what about
genome.
Health Matters?
Genome...
Have the benefits become
health
evident?
Health Matters is not very, very useful at all. on October 24th in 2003, the Concorde made its last commercial flight. That was the
but
last.
But Health Matters is still flying.
Well, isn't it not? I mean, you know, we talk about going to the moon and how we don't do that anymore. We also don't fly supersonically anymore.
But how many times have we hit our tail on the end of the runway and crashed?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Tony. We have. Let's admit it.
And another important release on October 24th, Apple released their Mac OS X Panther computer. You may remember.
No, I don't. Not a Mac boy.
And, well, even if you were, that was not exactly the high point of Mac. And one that a day that will live in infamy in Rick's mind, and December 1st, 2003, the use of handheld cell phones while driving was outlawed in the United Kingdom. Some of the people we lost in 2003, some very famous people, Johnny Cash, Buddy Ebsen, Barry White died
Barry
in 2003.
White.
Catherine Hepburn, Buddy Hackett, Gregory Peck all died in the year 2003, both of them in June or July. So that's where we were 10 years ago when we started our show, both scientifically and culturally, and here we are now.
Sometimes I like reminiscing about that. I mean, you know, Health Matters had been on for a considerable amount of time before you taken over, and it was an actual joint effort between four hospitals in the area. Each one would take a week, and St. Clair would coordinate, and I remember that went on for quite some time, and then over time, you know, it just needed some fresh air, and that's where you come in. Now, how
air.
On
yes,
earth,
air. Not first,
how on
air.
Earth you decided to put me over here, and I guess, you know, oh well.
No, I didn't have any, you know, Rick.
Yeah, I was the
in.
Closest warm body you had.
He was right behind me when the door was unlocked, and so we both came in.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
One health issue this time.
You get 1 minute.
I get 1 minute. Mexico surpasses the United States as the world's fattest nation, July 9, 2013. Read this in the Washington Times.
They should be proud. That's hard to do.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization found that Mexico has surpassed the United States as the world's fattest nation. 70% of its citizens are either overweight or obese. Their obesity rate, 32.8%, exceeds our obesity rate, 31.8%. Childhood obesity tripled in the last decade. A third of the country's teenagers are fat. 4 out of 5 of those teens will never become normal weight their entire lives.
And you think we can talk about this in 1 minute?
I'm just saying, well, yeah, we've got some other things to talk about. It's, you know, how do
it's
you,
certainly not a celebration.
Right. Kentucky, you know, has had the number one in tobacco use for a long time. And when someone else becomes worse than you are, there's a bit of relief that you're not labeled the worst in the world. There's not joy, certainly.
We always talk about this from a, not necessarily from a country standpoint, but a state standpoint. We're always looking for who's number 50 and who's number, you know, who's not number 50.
Right.
So now we got to move out to the country level.
Right. And Mexico is worse than us. Again, Abelardo Avila, a physician with their National Nutrition Institute, I said it is the lowest socioeconomic status, the poorest kids who are in the greatest danger of being obese, very similar to what's happening in the U.S. Why not stay tuned for our second fractional portion and see what else we've got on our show number 500. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back for the 500th time. My name is Rick Phillips and this is the second fractional portion of Health Matters.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This we have titled the What Went Wrong show.
What went wrong a lot?
Celebrating.
Should have been What Went Wrong a lot.
In investigating 500 shows of Health Matters dating back to 2003.
I'm amazed that you were able to get the count right. The first ones, we only thought there was going to be a few, so we didn't even number them.
Yeah, well, I went back, and it could be wrong. I don't know, but it's arbitrary, but it's a number.
So this is the 547th show.
Something like that. Who knows?
No, I'm kidding.
Our sponsor, once again, prescription drug overdoses, something else that has gone seriously wrong in our country, in our region, and over the past 10 years. Let's remind you of our first 5 facts about prescription drug overdoses. Number one, prescription painkillers killed 48,000 women between 1999 and 2010. More than 6,600 women, or 18 women every day, die of painkiller overdose in 2010. That's up from 1,300 in the year 1999. The director of the CDC said this is rates we have never seen before. He said it is underrecognized by doctors and patients. Fact number four, fatal overdoses increased more than 5 times among women over that span, and they more than tripled among men in that period of 1999 to 2010. Fact number 5, there were 4 times more deaths among women from prescription painkiller overdoses than cocaine and heroin deaths combined in 2010. Glum fact. Number six, more women now die of overdoses from pain pills like OxyContin than from cervical cancer or homicide. Now, I got this from the news releases. Cervical cancer in developed countries is not a major cause of death. So this is true, but this should not shock people who are aware of those conditions. Homicide, maybe a better reference.
Mm.
Fact number seven. While younger women, this is the point that you were asking about, Rick, while younger women in their 20s and 30s have the highest rates of abuse, the overdose death rate was highest among women ages 45 to 54. Once again, a very surprising finding. Does that mean, then, that these women, who may be, they weigh less than men, they may be on other prescription medications, there may be something else to do with it, why are they dying more than the young women who are abusing the drugs?
Right.
Why are they dying at higher rates?
Could it be that the drugs are just taking a higher toll on the, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or is it they've been doing it for that long that it's finally starting to take its toll?
It's hard to say. Like I said, there were two trends that happened about the same time. One is we started becoming very, very concerned about managing pain, and we thought we had reasonable drugs to manage pain. So we prescribed a lot of these things for chronic pain. Now, for a long time, there were people who held out. They said, look, this is only for cancer pain. You should not use narcotics for any type of non-cancer pain. Among many medical people, there was a gradual acceptance that they could be used for non-cancer pain, and this occurred over the past 10 years. And it culminated, Rick, when we figured out that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, things like ibuprofen, things like Aleve, actually increase your rate of heart attack and stroke. At that point, both the American Geriatric Society and the American Heart Association recommended narcotic medicines for chronic pain that is not managed by Tylenol. They said skip these arthritis pills altogether, even though they're over-the-counter. They cause a higher rate of heart disease, and that's particularly a problem among older people. I'll tell you, the bottom line is we do not. I mean, the fundamental problem is we do not have an effective way to manage pain. These drugs carry way too much side effects to be prescribed on a chronic basis. And I'm not talking about just narcotic pain relievers. I'm talking about all pain medicines altogether. We do not have a good and effective pain control strategy. And unfortunately, that has killed people. So there is that combination. Once they were in widespread use, people figured out you could abuse them, and they were very reliable. That sounds odd. They were reliable to abuse. That is, it wasn't like you would get a dose of super powerful pain medicine in. You could look at the milligrams. You knew exactly what you were getting.
Right.
If you kept them inside the capsule, they didn't cut them with talcum powder and other toxic things. So they were perceived to be actually safe because you knew exactly what you were getting. As it turns out, they were much more dangerous, perhaps for that very reason, than heroin and other drugs that were not pharmaceutically compounded. Fact number eight, in 2010, there were more than 200,000 emergency department visits for opioid misuse or abuse among women. That's one every 3 minutes a woman walked into an emergency room in 2010 with a problem related to these pain medicines. Number nine, in 2010, we prescribed, I'm saying America's physicians prescribed, enough painkillers to medicate every American adult every 4 hours for 1 month.
Oh, my goodness.
Four times higher than in 2010 than it was in 1999. And again, there was a very widespread use of these. And fact number 10, roughly 1 in 20 people in the U.S. report using prescription painkillers for non-medical reasons in the past year. I think that includes recreational use and abuse.
Right.
I think that's what that is. You could argue, well, what if they use them for sleep? I think that is technically a medical reason. But that's our 10 facts that we've gleaned from the CDC press releases, reminding you of fact number 1, 48,000 women died between 1999 and 2010 due to overdose of prescription painkillers.
Wow.
This is horrendous. This is embarrassing. And this simply cannot be. Now, I will say, Rick, the state of Kentucky has taken some action. We have enacted House Bill 1. It was terrible legislation, but it was very badly needed. And we have now tweaked it in the last legislative session to the point that it is onerous. It still creates a lot of work, and it doesn't, obviously, there's no extra compensation or no payment for the extra work it creates. But on the flip side, it has the potential then for cutting down on mass prescribing of opioid painkillers or narcotic painkillers, and I think there is a potential to save lives. And they have noticed about a 10% drop in certain narcotic prescriptions since this legislation went into place. That's nice. 10%, though, of 48,000.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, is not going to get the job done. Maybe we're prescribing more appropriately. My concern is I do not feel that these deaths are coming entirely because people are abusing the drugs or that doctors have made mistakes in their prescribing. I think you can do exactly what the textbooks say to exactly the patient who the textbooks say you should do it to, and they may die.
Right.
I do have no faith in these drugs at all. I feel like the drugs themselves are really toxic drugs. You take any type of an antibiotic, a cancer chemotherapy drug that does not save any lives but kills 48,000, that thing's off the market.
Right.
The fact that we give these drugs a pass is, to me, is very annoying. I think we're using really a double standard here.
But does it have something to do with our... Boy, this is an uncomfortable place to be, but it seems to me that, is it possible that as a society, our tolerance for pain has gotten so bad that literally we're taking painkillers with things that maybe we shouldn't be?
I think you have a point. In the analysis that I read on this, they said there has not been a rise in painful conditions. We do not.
The human condition has not gotten more painful.
Right. Well, we've got Iraqi war veterans and Afghanistan war veterans that have had serious war injuries and are now surviving, whereas they would have died before. So if we apply that to the population in general, is there a population of survivors,
correct,
who are in pain where they would have died before? The CDC says, no, we do not think that life for the population has gotten that much more painful. It may be a lower tolerance. The other thing is, we felt that we had, like I said, there was that push. We felt, look, we finally have some very safe narcotic pain medicines that are time release, and now we can address these pain issues in a way we were never able to do before.
Right.
For whatever reason, this is horrendous. It is unacceptable.
But what's now, honestly, Rick, Tony, I mean, at 300 million Americans, you know, roughly.
Right.
And then you start looking at the subset that are armed forces, and then subset that down into the smaller group of victims of some type of an incident, whether it be combat related or otherwise. I mean, you're still talking about such a small, I mean, statistically, it would have to be nothing more than an anomaly. I mean, just statistically insignificant. Because, I mean, 300 million is a very large number. But then you start looking at it and you think, well, how many more people now, as we increase access to care, as we bring those medical programs to people who didn't have them 15, 20 years ago, and we get them in to see that physician, and now they have the opportunity to handle something or to treat a painful situation, now all of a sudden they're getting pain medicines that maybe their parents or grandparents weren't getting. And that's where I just, you know, you have to wonder if, generally speaking, as a society, we complain about pain too much.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing. There should be outrage over this. We go to war when a group of people from other countries attacks our World Trade Center, 2,800 deaths.
Right.
We go to a war over 2,800, 48,000. At some point, someone should at least pound their shoe on the table over this.
Well, no, and I feel the same way about the flu, Tony. I think the exact same thing. It gets 5,000 people a year. The flu does, and yet we don't seem to take it seriously as a society.
Yeah, maybe the bodies need to be piled up somewhere so that people can actually see this death toll. But it really is time for change. The frustrating thing, you know, finally, the feds shut down those pill mills in Florida.
Correct.
They were spewing pollution all over the Southeast. I read in one of my medical journals, you know, we exported the Casper system, an electronic prescription registry system, to Florida. They didn't want it because they would have to pay for it. We gave it to them free. A drug company actually agreed to bear the expense of running it for them. They had a data breach in their electronic drug
right.
monitoring system, and they're ready to pull it out again. I do not understand the mentality that looks at this kind of a death toll and says, well, I can't be bothered with that. It's too expensive to do anything about it.
Tony, you know, as cynical and as bad as I hate to sound, I mean, it just boils down to sheer money. I mean, people are selling these drugs. And the thing is, it's not just the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are obviously selling them to legitimate pharmacies for legitimate purposes. And they're probably not happy they're being abused. They're not happy they're being sold or stolen and then remarketed. And they're passing through several layers of hands, everybody profiting along the way, I might add. I mean, there's just so much money in this that you can see where it's very hard to stay genuine and have the best possible motives in mind.
I understand. We've had celebrities die of drug overdoses, so if it were a lack of notoriety, that should be there. The numbers are there. Every community in Eastern Kentucky is aware of this. I do not understand at this point. Like you said, it takes money sometimes to preserve. There's a law of thermodynamics that says you can create order if you invest energy.
Right.
That entropy increases unless you put in energy. It's almost like you can create a false situation if you invest enough money. You can create a situation where logic does not prevail if you invest enough money. That's a very cynical viewpoint, as you mentioned, but right now logic is not prevailing in this. If logic prevailed, these drugs would be off the market. They kill too many people. They do not cure anyone. How can we prescribe these drugs to our patients in their best interest when they have killed this many people? I don't understand it.
Right.
That is our sponsor.
Boy, is it.
Yes. Prescription drug overdoses, something else gone seriously wrong over the past 10 years. Well, obviously, we've killed a lot of the second fractional portion, but I did want to get a couple of things in. One, this was presented initially at a meeting of the Heart Rhythm Society last year, and now it's been published in the Journal of Circulation.
Is that a dance school?
Yes, the Heart Rhythm Society. That's right, and a one and a two. And the American College of Cardiology, the American Heart Association, if you have a serious heart rhythm problem, you get one of those, it looks like a giant pacemaker implanted in you. It's called an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. And that thing sits on top of your heart rhythm, senses if anything goes wrong, and it shocks you.
Boy, does it.
Yes. It shocks your heart, and those things, they actually turn out to work fairly well for people who have very serious heart rhythms. Well, if you get one, according to the American College of Cardiology, according to the American Heart Association, you should not participate in any moderate or high-intensity sport. That okay. is their guidelines. So what they recommend, you'll like this, you could do golf, bowling, or billiards.
A sport.
Yeah.
Am I going to lose weight doing that?
That they recommend.
Am I going to lose weight doing that?
You know, golf, maybe.
I mean, I'm probably going to gain weight because
and
I'm going to probably
me,
eat
I,
chips
for
while
all
I'm
of
playing.
You out there who are competitive bowlers and feel like that's your exercise regimen, I just can't see bowling. Too much time in my mind standing around looking at the pins waiting for the ball to come back.
Yeah, but you start throwing the ball for 10 frames for three games, which is what typically they do, plus practice time. Yeah, you can be tired. I mean, I'm not going to say you're going to be aerobic and in shape, but...
But you got a hot dog back waiting for you back. As soon as you finish your roll, you got a hot dog.
Well, you do have to show some discipline here, Tony. I mean, there has to be a little bit of discipline involved.
I think any sport...
Billiards?
Yeah, I know. And I've told you this. I was over at Carter Caves. I was hiking, and, you know, one of the trails went along the golf course. This guy drives up in a golf cart. He carefully sets his cigarette next to his drink on the golf cart, hits the ball, climbs back in the golf cart, picks up the cigarette, and...
Was he a thin guy?
What's going on? you know, I don't even remember. The cigarette kept him thin, I guess, and kept him, but it was clearly not, he was not getting exercise. My problem with any sport that allows you to park food beside the area of competition, whether it's the pool table or on the golf cart or whatever, I think I always considered a real exercise sport to be something where you couldn't necessarily have food out where you were competing.
Right.
That's arbitrary, but it is. And at any rate, they shouldn't, right? They shouldn't. They should do these things. Well, a survey in 2005 of electrophysiologists, these are heart rhythm specialists, showed that 71% of them reported having at least one patient who did participate in vigorous competitive sports,
right,
despite the recommendations. So Rachel Lampert, who's of Yale University, she said, well, there, let's do a sports registry. If these people are going to do this, let's see what happens. And that is the heart of a scientist. I already respect and admire this woman because that's exactly what a scientist does. If something is happening, even if it's not according to recommendations, study it. So they found 328 athletes ages 10 to 60 years old who were participating in organized sports and 44 in high-risk sports. Average age 33, 89 of them less than 20. A lot of teenagers with these things just can't give up their sports.
Okay.
One-third female, two-thirds male. 60 were competitive athletes, varsity or junior varsity level. About 42% of them had an established heart rhythm problems. The other had a congenital or family condition that predisposed to them, and that's how they got ICD implanted. Most common sports, running, soccer, basketball, and skiing or snowboarding. Now, they've watched this group now for 31 months, and a little short of 3 years. There were no deaths or arrests during sports. But
you don't mean arrests as in police. You mean their heart didn't arrest.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's correct. Their heart did not stop.
There probably were some arrests.
Sports. 20% of them got shocks from their ICDs. There were...
So only one in five?
Yeah, one in five from their ICDs. And by the way, that's just in general. There were only actually 37 of these. That was about 10% of them got shocks during sports. These 37 participants, if you look at them, they got 49 shocks during competition and practice, 39 shocks during other physical activity, and 33 shocks at rest. So clearly they got more shocks when they were competing. And in eight episodes, they had multiple shocks. Can you imagine that? Basically, you're playing soccer, you're running down the sideline, and then your chest, just this thing just starts buzzing your chest, hitting you with electrical current.
Well, it only hits you once, right?
Well, no, these multiple shocks. They said up to four shocks.
Wow. One's bad enough.
That would be very annoying. That would affect your performance, I think, on the field.
What if you were about to kick the ball? You think you could kick it farther?
When you get shocked?
Yeah.
No, I think...
You'd fall down kicking it?
I don't know. I think you would lose your concentration. I'm convinced. I'm not sure if I threw the ball to you and there was an electric shock in your chest right as the ball hit, I think you'd be more likely to drop it.
Yeah.
I just think that. I don't know. The other concern they had was when they're running, maybe they would pull the leads loose. 97% at 5 years had no problems, so that didn't seem to be a big problem. Two people died. These, again, they have dangerous heart rhythms. One was a cyclist. He died at work, and the other had a genetic problem, played volleyball and softball, died while being hospitalized for the heart problem. So apparently, and this is not a Health Matters recommendation by any stretch, but apparently, as we observe people who have these implantable cardioverter defibrillators, and if they are vigorously physically active, this group of 300 people who were observed. Now, the problem is these may be special people. They may have something inside them that makes them want to practice and allows them to practice and compete athletically while they have that implantable cardioverter defibrillator. The official recommendations of the American Heart Association still are don't do competitive sports. But this is at least some reassurance from some people who ignore that and did it anyway, that it can work out. We've got more stuff.
Speaking of doing it anyway.
Yeah. Why not take a break, realign yourself, recover from your counter shocks, check your leads and your EKG, and then come back for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is Health Matters 500, What Went Wrong show. We're asking ourselves, how in the world was there such a failure of supervision and oversight that Health Matters has been able to record 500 shows?
It really makes you wonder.
Yeah. Our sponsor for the final time, prescription drug overdoses in women, something else that has gone seriously wrong in the last 10 years. Our top 10 fun facts and... Well, I can't call them fun facts. I'm sorry. We joke about a lot of things here, but this is no joking matter. Fact number one, prescription painkillers, that is narcotic painkillers, killed 48,000 women between 1999 and 2010. Fact number two, more than 6,600 women, 18 women every day, died from prescription painkiller overdose in 2010. Fact number three, the director of the CDC says women are dying from prescription painkillers at rates we have never seen before.
Wow.
And that is a reflection of fact number four. Fatal overdoses increased more than five times among women, more than three times among men in that time period between 1999 and 2010. Fact number five, there were four times more deaths among women from prescription painkiller overdose than cocaine and heroin deaths combined. Fact number six, more women now die of overdoses from pain pills than from cervical cancer or homicide. Fact number seven, younger women in their 20s and 30s have the highest rate of abuse, but the overdose death rate was highest among women ages 45 to 54. Surprised everybody. Fact number eight, in 2010, there were more than 200,000 ER visits for narcotic misuse or abuse among women, one every 3 minutes. Fact number nine, enough painkillers were prescribed in 2010 to medicate every American adult every 4 hours for 1 month.
That's amazing.
That is four times higher than the amount sold in 1999. And fact number 10, roughly 1 in 20 people in the U.S. reports using prescription painkillers for non-medical reasons in the past year. Our sponsor, prescription drug overdoses, we need to do something about this. This simply cannot stand, and things have to change. That's all there is to it. First article this time, this came from actually from Health Day. And Rick, this is for you.
Good.
You've talked a lot about internet searching.
Yep.
And so Dr. Marco Huesch, I guess, H-U-E-S-C-H. And those of you who know how that's supposed to be, if that's Hesch or Huesch or Huesch, I don't know. But he is at the School of Public Policy at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. And he looked in December and January to detect whether or not search information was being passed from 20 popular health-related websites to third parties. You go on these health websites to search for something.
Right.
What do they do with the information? Is it confidential? Is it not? Well, it's not.
Yeah, of course not. I mean, you're entering it willingly. It's almost like, you know, if you go into a place that's full of cameras and they take your picture, you've pretty much submitted to the fact that it's okay to have your picture taken.
I love this quote. This is from the chief author. He says, if you go on a website, if you don't pay for the product, then chances are you are the product.
Exactly.
That is, they're feeding you some information, some videos or whatever, and they want to study what you do and sell that to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And that's why the advertisements along the side of your computer screen change every time you do a search.
Haven't you ever noticed how they're targeted? I mean, you look at the advertisements, you go, wow, how did it know I wanted to know about that? Some of them hit home, or it's stuff that maybe you went to Amazon and you searched for a particular product, And then you go to another site and you're surfing looking for that, and you realize the same product you searched for on Amazon is showing up on the sidebar of your computer. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did. We were looking for some dining room chairs, and I looked for Amish chairs, and all of a sudden, for a week,
my computer
was filled with all these Amish chair things.
Yep, absolutely. And they have figured out how to very specifically target your searches and then use them against you later.
All 20 of these sites, and we will name some of them, passed data to at least one third party. The average was 6 or 7 third parties. 13 sites had what they call tracking elements, which actually track what you look for on the site. 5 of the 13 sites that track data also linked to social media. Searches were leaked to third parties through this link, and 7 websites. Facebook like button is an example. When you like something, we've talked about this before.
Right.
That is, you basically send up a smoke signal.
Well, you jumped up on the box, waved your hand, and said, I love what's in this box.
Yes. Pretty much. U.S. government sites did not leak and had less tracking than the other sites. It wasn't sure what happened to the leaked information, but most of the time, these companies sell the data to advertisers. Now, they usually sell aggregate data, but Rick, there is absolutely no reason they could not sell your individual data.
Right, absolutely.
Because they know where you're accessing it from. So here are the sites, just to let you know. The National Institute of Health, Food and Drug Administration, New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, Medscape, and Mayo Clinic, those sites did not have third-party tracking. Those are, in their opinion, the safer sites. The ones that did track, a little bit of a surprise here, PubMed and Medline Plus. We use that a lot of times for searching for medical articles.
Right.
The CDC has third-party tracking. The National Cancer Institute, the National Health Service of the United Kingdom, WebMD, Weight Watchers, Drugs.com, Men's Health, Health.com, Fox News Health, the New York Times, all of these have third-party tracking where they allow someone other than themselves to track what you're looking for when you search for health information on their site.
Hmm.
So we've talked before, if you remember back to our Yes, We Scan show, there is supposed to be protection for your medical records, your medical information. But when you go to a health site to search about a disease you might have, people are watching, people are recording, and they can trace it back to you.
I have known, I mean, obviously the targeted searching has been problematic. I mean, I guess some people see it as good. I mean, if that's what you want and you want to be inundated with that, I personally don't like it. It feels intrusive.
Right. Let me ask you, Rick, do you avoid registering with your search engine and try to somehow create some kind of a disconnect between it and your other information? Or you just assume, well, I'm going to get bombarded. I just won't search for anything out of the ordinary.
No. I mean, I use the computer like any normal person would. At least I suspect it's like any normal person would. Where I kind of draw the line is I have a couple of email addresses that I am willing to give out and a couple that I'm not willing to give out. So, Tony, for instance, you are on the good list. And so when I give out an email address to you, a very select few people have that email, and thus it doesn't get spammed. It doesn't turn into spam. And then when I'm going to a website and I'm doing some searches and it wants me to check this or look for that, or, hey, we'll give you this brochure if you'll sign up for this, I have dummy email addresses that I use for that. And thus, they don't tend to bother me as far as turning it into a targeted emails. I mean, because, you know, if I've ever mentioned to you, I get anywhere from 300 to 500 emails a day, and majority of them aren't junk. I can't afford to have junk mail. It's just something that I have to protect myself with. So, yeah, there are certain ways you can behave on a browser and certain ways. You know, the other thing, too, if this may sting for some of our listeners, hopefully it doesn't. Don't ask me to come fix your computer. Don't ask an IT guy to come fix your computer because it's got a virus and then try to tell us that you weren't on a site that has viruses. I can't tell you how many times people have asked me to come look at their computer suspecting that they've never been to a website that would be questionable. There are questionable websites out there. You want to stay safe? Get off those websites.
Now, wait a second. So this brings up something, Rick. Is there some type of, I took the Hippocratic Oath, more or less. I mean, I'm not going to divulge, if you tell me something about your own sexual practices or whatever, I'm not going to divulge that. Now, is there a similar computer maintenance oath that you will not divulge the browsing habits of
your
pair?
I don't. I mean, that's the professional way to behave. I mean, we just fix it and move on. I just don't like it when people tell me they haven't been when I know exactly how they got the thing.
Well, but my diabetic patients, they don't follow the diet.
Yeah, but you know they've been to Shoney's eating pie.
Right. I saw them at McDonald's. I understand that, but I don't bring it up. And I don't snicker. I consider that to be confidential. You're telling me right now, you doctor people's computers. You get all sorts of information about what they did.
No, I do not have the information. All I know is it's been years of experience. I understand how you will not get a virus searching Yahoo or Google. You want to go to some site that's hard to spell and probably morally questionable, you are probably going to get something that's not healthy.
This tip from Health Matters, if there are more than two X's in your website, you're
if there's more
for,
than one,
then don't call Rick and tell him that your computer is clean. He knows better.
The point there, Tony, is there's a level of safe searching. Getting back to topic. You can understand that I can go to Amazon and I can search for a device or a thing or a book. And yes, for the next week or so where there are targeted ads, I'm going to see that come up as part of their targeting me as a consumer. That's not bad. That's not necessarily dangerous. It's not unwanted in some cases. What I'm suggesting is when you know, you got to be careful where you're going, what you're doing, and how you're displaying your information to the web browser, because not everybody has the morals and standards that exist at Google, Yahoo, you know, the major players in the business. So, you know, just make sure you know where you're going.
Dr. David Katz, director of the Yale University Prevention Research Center, said that this is a reminder about the Internet. The Internet is a window that works both ways. We can look out into the world through it, but the world is looking back. Sites devoted to health information are no exception. He mentioned some privacy tools. One is Ghostery, spelled Ghostery. The other one word, do not track me. But even he is not certain whether a smartphone that is browsing the Internet can be protected with any of that software.
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, you're trusting the fact that another company wrote a piece of software that they're telling you is safe, and at that point, you basically have to trust them as to whether they're telling you the truth or not. Now, are they? Most of them that aren't telling the truth will go out of business. Fact is. But how many web cookies and how many tracking devices were put into web pages 4 years before we knew they were? That's the thing. There may be stuff going on there that you just don't know.
So assume that you are, in fact, performing in public anytime
exactly.
You access the
you
Internet.
Always have to assume that whatever you're doing is traceable, trackable, searchable.
Next up, some good news. Rarity on this show, apparently. This was from July 1st. Also came out of the CDC. Non-fatal ATV, all-terrain vehicle injuries among children and teens, has dropped by more than a third from their 2004 peak. Again, right after Health Matters came on the air, we named the ATV as our number one Christmas gift of death. And
has it
ATV
moved?
Injuries peaked and began dropping. I think Health Matters clearly
has
the
it changed. It hasn't.
Sole
has it?
Reason why this happened. In 2010, population-based injury rates for juveniles under age 15 dropped 37% from that peak of 2004. There were 43,000 non-fatal ATV injuries reported in 2004, 27,500 in 2010. It's not clear. The thing that they're saying is that with the recession, people have less money, and that is a very expensive, fun thing
toy to have
for young children to have. They feel that they're putting less money into gas. The rate of buying these has dropped as well. What's interesting is also, I mentioned these are non-fatal injuries. The fatality rate has also dropped by about half since the mid-2000s. Deaths among juveniles 15 and under peaked at 184 in the year 2004, and by 2009, 94 in that year. So, again, it looks like whether it's economic, whether it is, and the other thing is, you know, we have a lot of states now have laws. People have gotten the message that you should not be riding double on these things. Helmets are still not used enough, but they are being used. Perhaps it's a safety thing. Perhaps it's an economic thing. Perhaps kids have become less enamored with ATVs.
Well, let me ask you this, Tony, and this is just hypothesis on my part that would obviously take study to figure out. But, you know, back 5, 7, 8 years ago, these four-wheeled, I don't want to call them ATVs, but these like gators. They're basically like an overpowered golf cart
right.
That hunters use to go out into the woods in, that farmers are using. You know, they were using ATVs prior to those. And maybe using an ATV inappropriately and thus getting turned over, must, you know, maybe going too fast. I wonder if using the right vehicle for the right purpose has eliminated a few of those injuries.
Well, they certainly cut into the market. So whether it's right purpose or whatever, there are less ATVs being sold because you're right. You're an older person. You can use a Gator. It's got seat belts. It's got a roll bar. It is a safer vehicle. It also won't do quite the speeds that the ATVs will.
It's got a place to put your tools in the back. It's got, you can drive around and actually, running a farm, you know the value of being able to carry stuff with you when you're going out.
Right. And many wooded situations, you could get by with that. Now, the ATVs, they, of course, made their name because they will go up steep hills. They'll also fit in tight spots.
Right.
And you can get deep into the forest with those for hunting and also just for recreation. And the Gator is not really a recreational vehicle. It's not fun the way an ATV is in terms of sliding through the mud and all that.
But again, I still think some of those ATV deaths were associated with people using an ATV when they really weren't using it for fun. They were using it for some other purpose.
I'm sure it's a combination of things. The good news is, though, that finally our children, there has been at least some moderation in the number of children being killed by these Christmas presents. Once again, like the prescription narcotics, if you're using something that is supposed to improve your life and it's killing you, you've really got to rethink your approach to whether it's pain control or whether it's recreational fun among kids under age 16. Either way you look at it, you really need to make a change.
No, you're absolutely right, Tony. I mean, it requires some thought on our part. And maybe that is the end. Maybe in the end, we're just not thinking about things enough.
I think we have tried for years.
So you're thinking about it right now.
To muster that outrage at a Christmas gift, people spending their money on something that will kill their children.
Right.
If we can inform them, we believe, if we can inform a person of the fact that this does kill your child, then perhaps you would not buy it. And I think perhaps that's a similar type of outrage needs to come about for prescription narcotic painkillers, that they are killing far too many people and helping far too few.
I tell you, the one way to put it, when you start talking about you buy a Christmas gift that will kill your child, I mean, it sounds really terrible when you say it like that. But I think maybe the better way to phrase it is to say when you're going to buy a gift that's going to kill somebody's child.
Yeah, some way.
There's still too many dying. And regardless of whether they're fun, whether you can train them how to drive it, whatever, the fact is that device is going to kill somebody's kids.
And with that, number 500 goes to bed. Rick, can you get us out of here?
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hosoda and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to msuradio.com or visit us on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these tips on avoiding Health Matters overdose.
Only listen to radio shows that are prescribed to you by a healthcare professional. Misusing or abusing prescription or over-the-counter radio shows is not a safe alternative to illicit substance abuse.
Never take larger or more frequent doses of radio shows, particularly prescription shows, to try to get faster or more powerful effects.
Never share or sell your radio shows. Keep all prescription shows in a safe place that can only be reached by people who take or give them.
Follow the directions on the label when you listen to our show. Read all warning labels. Some episodes cannot be heard safely when you take other medicines or drink alcohol.
Turn on a light when you listen to the show at night so that you know you have the correct amount of the right show.
Keep Health Matters in its original container.
Monitor the use of radio programming by children and teenagers.
Dispose of unused, unneeded, or expired episodes of Health Matters. Follow federal guidelines for how to do this.
And please participate in national radio show take back days or local take back programs in your community.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.